Hello, hello. Welcome to the show.
That's not how he sounds.
I'm Will Meadows. Okay, let's try one more time.
Hello, hello.
It's worse every time.
The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and family closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up. Seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows.
Sarah Meadows.
Kevin Delp.
Melissa Delp.
Katie Pills.
Ryan Pills.
In the house!
So happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day!
Yay. Hope you are listening to this while you're driving to your friends and family's picnics.
Hope they have the day off.
Yeah, and hope that it's sunny and beautiful and all those wonderful things. We are not playing board games. Well, we might be. I don't know. What are we doing today, you guys think?
That day, we have family, so we'll probably be playing board games, but not with
you. We're going to be going to a barbecue.
Barbecues are good.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have plans, and then they all change, so now we'll probably just do a family day.
Oh, that's so sad.
Well, it's actually kind of nice and relieving. We were originally, since none of my family listens to this, we were originally going to have, like, my mom, my sister and her three kids, my other sister and her four kids.
So Facebooking. I'm so
my grandparents are going to come cousins.
Up. It's going to be like 1,000 people at our house. I don't know
if you can just review board games all day.
Perfect. That'll be all right.
That's what we'll be doing.
That's what we've been doing today. We launched a couple new ones on YouTube, and then we've also been playing a bunch of games tonight. Mm-hmm. What cool stuff
What's our first game that we played, Will?
The first game we played tonight?
Tonight.
I played Junk.
Nope.
Space.
Nope. The first game. The very
Drop
first
it.
Game.
Drop It.
Drop It.
Oh, is that what it was called? It was actually called Drop It.
Drop It.
It was. And it was cool.
By Cosmos.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Connect Four, but...
Because you're dropping things. That's the only connection.
Right. That's the only thing.
Four players dropping into this, like, vertical plastic housing device.
Yeah. Clear.
Clear. You can see through it. You're dropping, like, wooden shapes, squares, and what was the proper name?
Circles.
Names?
Rhombuses.
Rhombuses.
Or rhombi.
Diamonds.
Diamond-shaped
ones.
Triangles. And, yeah, four players.
Yep.
You have to, there's, like, I don't
you
know
can play two to four.
Four colors.
Four different colors, yeah. And there's, like, as your pieces build up on top of each other, you score based on the height of, like, the highest point of your shape that you just dropped.
But
there's 1,000,000 other rules about
it. Yes, it's very limiting on where and how you're going to score points, because usually you can't place a circle or a square or a diamond, or you can't touch your own piece because you can't touch
colors.
There
are, like, zones. So there's, like, vertical zones that you can't play any one of
and
the four
shapes
in.
And you can't touch another shape of the same shape of someone else's or your own.
Or the same color as the one you just dropped.
So very limiting, but fun.
Yeah, it was cool. I actually did. Like, that sounds like a lot of rules. And when you were explaining it, I thought, oh man, who knew you could have AP on a Connect Four game? But it actually did go pretty quick. Sometimes you just have to realize, like, I'm not going to get any points.
Did we go all the way to the top of it?
We went further than I thought we would, yeah. I didn't think there'd be
any spatial thing going on.
And then who won? Did Brian? Did you win?
No, I thought you won.
I don't think I won.
No, Brian won.
Brian won.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he played the last one that gave him like 7 points.
Yeah, and took the lead right there at the end. So that was pretty cool.
Yep.
I then played Junk Orbit.
Yep, by Renegade Game Studios.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. What do you think of that one, Ryan? You played
it. I liked it. I won. Any game I
he
win,
destroyed me,
automatically
actually.
Biased.
I thought he was about to say bye, but he said bye
this.
Buy this.
Buy this.
Yeah, exactly.
Explain that one a little bit.
Yeah, so there are, I don't know, are there more than just the three planets? Earth, the moon, and Mars is what we played with. Are there other planets?
If
that
there's
you
five
in?
Players, there's two other moon things. I don't know what they are. They're not planets, but.
So on these celestial bodies, there are different locations. And each location has a name, say Mexico City. And there will be a tile that matches that. Also Mexico City, but it'll be orbiting either the moon or Mars. So you're these little spaceships, and you're traveling in orbit around these three planets, like a
slingshot yeah, gravity.
Like a wild figure eight orbit thing going on. And you're trying, every time you pick up a tile, you place a tile behind you and you move forward that many spaces that are on the tile. So there's like this weird action reaction sort of thing.
Shoot it out the backside of your ship to launch yourself the other direction.
Yeah, and you're trying to get to those locations that are on the tile to turn them in and get to the points that correspond to the number on the tile. And
yeah, so you have like a cargo thing that you can store and then you are trying to drop them off to add them to your inventory or whatever. And then when one of the planet stacks runs out of tiles, the player with the most points is Ryan.
Yeah, and each player had a special power with their ship. And mine was pretty cool because when I used Earth-specific tiles, I got to do a plus one, minus one on the total distance, and that helped me in my remote deliveries and pinpointing just the right space to go to. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I think it had a nice tail presence. It comes in a cool tubular, what's the word I'm looking for there?
Cylindrical
tube. Mm-hmm. That's where all the pieces come in, which
it's
is cool,
not
sort of a
fit
box
on any of your normal game
it's
shelves.
Right there, it's right there behind Ryan.
I had to dedicate a whole shelf to it though. That's
but it's such a neat package for a game. You get
cool.
So used to square
still trying to turn
rectangle
around with
I still don't know where it is.
Directly
it's
behind
somewhere.
And then you guys were playing what at the same
we
time?
Played Gearworks by Peacekeeper
oh,
Games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was actually a produced copy.
The final version?
Final version!
Yes.
With a cool playmat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was that a Kickstarter stretch goal, or was that an add-on, or was that part of it?
I think it was an add-on.
Okay. It looked cool. It looks really nice on the table.
Do you
want
to give a brief overview, Melissa, of what you're trying to do?
Sure. Gearworks is... It reminds me a little bit of Sudoku, mm-hmm. where you have limitations of where you can put cards into a grid. And in Gearworks, the rows you have to go in either ascending or descending order with your numbered cards, and then the columns you cannot have the same colors. So if there's a red 5 gear in the row, you can't put another red gear in that column.
In that column, yeah.
Right. And you're placing your cards to basically gain control of the gears in those columns and rows to get parts, and then you're using the parts to build contraptions, and it's a really interesting yeah. puzzly type of game.
Because if you build a full contraption, you get 9 points, but if it's only half done, you only get part points. So.
Yeah, and then you think you have the parts you need, but then Kevin lays a card that takes both of them away,
yeah.
and you get nothing.
Ah,
yeah.
Let's just say I swept the board the last round.
The last round, Kevin went from trailing the first two rounds to beasting it in the last round, and he won.
I got 8 of the 9 parts.
Wow. That's crazy. I liked it that the gears, I think we played a prototype originally of the game, and it was like just cardboard pieces, mm-hmm. but they were like uber thick wooden
yeah.
pieces now. Those look really cool.
So the playmat's cool. We didn't get that, of course, with the prototype. The other neat thing is that every player has a player power.
Oh, was
yeah.
that new? Or
that is new.
New.
Oh,
you
cool.
can use one time per round. Mine was for this game. I could ignore one time per round. The color could be the same in a column. So it usually has to be different.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's nice. It helped me
was
out.
Was that what helped you sweep? Was that the?
It did help me get
saving until that last turn would make sense.
Well, I get to use it every round.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. The game is played over 3 rounds.
Yeah, 3 rounds. So.
And something that was interesting too is that Melissa was drawn in as one of the characters
mm-hmm.
that
yeah,
you can play in this.
Yes.
Yeah. So Melissa
Promo
got to
cards.
Play as herself.
I did.
What's your superpower?
You can pay spark tokens to lay a card on top of another card. And with my power, you can actually take that card that you're replacing back into your hand.
Oh, that's really nice.
It is.
So I heard that he's going to have some of these promo cards. Peacekeeper Games will be at Origins, and he'll have some promo cards there.
Cool.
At Origins. Mm-hmm. Of Melissa.
Yes. Get your Melissa card. And
did
it's
you,
red.
Did you
it's
think you'd ever be
red.
Able to say that? That's the thing. Like, get your card with my face on it. Awesome. Well, let's go and take a moment to give a shout out to our sponsor.
Final Frontier Games has a late pledge open for their game Robin Hood and the Merry Men. It's going to be open until the end of July, so if you missed the Kickstarter, check that out and see all the awesome things that they unlocked with the game.
Very cool.
It looks very cool. I actually just saw some of the new like tokens, and I think it's probably for the deluxe set, but they've got like, in the original, they had just the like wood sticks and circle traps or whatever. And the new stuff is like, actually looks like wood barricades, actually looks like traps. There's some pretty cool deluxe components.
We have some of the behind the scenes, because I know Will and Melissa are working on the rule book for this game.
The instruction manual.
Melissa's got the text and Will's got the graphic design, and they're putting those together. And
so if you don't like it, don't blame us. But it will be our fault.
Going to be doing some blind play tests on the rule book, make sure it's understandable of that.
Yeah, trying to get as many charts as we can. But the components, again, do look really cool for it. And they've added some new pieces, too. Like, and I'll need to figure this out for the instruction manual, but there's also a bunch of new characters too, and all of those have like really cool little painted meeples and stuff. So
like Guy of Gisborne and Prince John and the Sheriff.
Looking forward to playing those.
Yeah, cool. We also just got tonight the
Rise of Nobility.
Yes,
Rise of Nobility Deluxe copy with
with 30-pound coins.
Yeah, like those coins were hefty.
They're super cool. They're heavy duty. Did you get to see it?
Mm-hmm.
Heavy duty metal. Like each coin, I don't know how much it weighs. I'm not a good ounce guesser, but
like larger than a quarter.
We should weigh them, but they were
three
like
times thicker than a quarter. Yeah, and gold, pretty cool. Definitely cool. I'm excited.
Was it real gold?
Maybe. I hope so.
Gold colored.
We'll pull that version out and play that ASAP, because that one looks real cool. Another thing that is real cool is tonight's house guest. This is pretty awesome. You guys, so it's not really a house guest. You guys had the opportunity to do an interview while you were at CMON.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you give us a little intro on that?
So while we were there, we were able to interview Eric Lang, and we were able to talk to him about a little bit about him and his history in gaming and how he got to CMON, and not because he's working there full time as a director of games there, and a little bit about some other things he was able to hint at. And I guess I should say, maybe after the interview, we'll give a little bit more about some of the things he was teasing us during the interview.
Ooh.
So let's say hello to Eric Lang.
Hey! Thank you for letting me in.
Yeah. And you did leave your coat at the door.
That's
so
true.
We appreciate
I'm like
that.
A vampire, so I need to be like invited before I can come in.
So, did you leave your shoes off at the door too? I mean, how does that work?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm part vampire, part hippie, right? So that's I'll leave both the coat and the shoes at the door.
Awesome. So you've been in the world of board game or board game industry for how long?
20-ish years. 2018, right? Oh God, 23 years.
23 years. What got you into this world?
Board games. You want to know more than that, don't you?
A little bit more, yeah. Right, we talked about being succinct, but maybe not that succinct.
All right, not that succinct. So I've been playing board games since I was a kid, like about somewhere between 6 and 8. I can't even remember now because so long ago. I'm so old. I used to play games with my grandmother in Germany, like for every summer I'd go to visit, and that was kind of like the highlight of my year. And so there's always been – I've always had a connection with board games, and – we played really bad board games, and like these bad mass market German board games. So I would modify them so that they would like end and be fun. So based on just that sort of followed me around for many years. And even when I wasn't playing board games all the time, I was still thinking about it.
Okay.
So our next question was, what got you into designing games? And it sounded like even as a young child, you were already thinking along those lines.
Yep. As I like to say, that's I've been making games ever since I was a little nugget.
Very cool. So you went to a college, or did you just finish high school and just start like on your own?
I did not. I didn't go to college. I'm the last generation of the what do we call it? The self-educated man.
Cool.
So. I grew up in the around the same time as Wikipedia, so I would always because apparently that's where I do all my research. Ba-dum-ching. I moved up relatively early and was on my own, so I was working full time, and I'd never wanted to do anything other than make games for a living. So I basically positioned myself to do jobs around like adjacent to the industry and. Until a point where I finally got a foot in the door through AOL chat groups. Remember that way back
AOL,
in the day,
yeah.
Right? and I sort of networked my way up in there, and then got a job with a development job with FASA, and it all started there.
Cool. So tell us when you transitioned. How long ago was that when you transitioned to being more of a full-time designer?
Well, let's see. I've been writing game design on my tax return since 98. So I did it the hard way, though. I transitioned the hard way. I started my own game company. Okay. To publish my stuff because I was young and I knew everything, right? You know, as a young 20-year-old, like, I know everything about games. Nobody can touch my genius. So I made my own – I did my own company, hired all my friends, all the best career moves. We went broke very, very quickly. Because we were very young and passionate and energetic, and we ran a good show, but we didn't know how to handle money, right? We were all creative people that just wanted to make games. And so my first paycheck was to myself. And then after that, I started working with Fantasy Flight around 2001. Mm-hmm. That's when I was doing it full time.
Oh, and now you're working full time with Simon?
That's right.
And how did that transition happen?
Well, first I wasn't working for Simon, and then I was.
Okay. He likes these really short answers.
I can't help myself sometimes. So, I've been working with Simon as a freelancer for, 5 years now, I think. I've designed Chaos Ball and Arcadia Quest and Bloodborne stuff while I was freelancing. But I just, I got to know the team so well, and I worked so well with everybody that I kind of felt like I was an employee, like just de facto. So after a couple of pivotal periods in the company history, there was like, why don't I told them that, you know, I wanted to slow down the number of games that I put out and wanted to be more involved from the beginning to the end in all aspects of it.
Okay.
And they're like, well, why don't come join us? Why don't you join us as, like, you know, we'll give you a title, we'll call you game director, and okay. You can do that thing. And I was like, that sounds pretty awesome. Okay.
So that's your official title is game director at CMON?
That's right.
And how long has that been now?
Almost a little over a year.
So what are some of the enjoyable things of being game director at CMON?
Basically everything I do, but I think the highlights are managing my team. I have a team of 7 people in Sao Paulo, Brazil, all developers, all fantastically talented people. I also work adjacent to the production department, so I'm a pain in their blank. I enjoy working this closely with the team, and we correspond every day. We work on multiple different projects. I don't design everything, but I do oversee and put an input right in everything we do.
So you've worked on a lot of games, designed a lot of games. Could you tell me what some of either your favorite games or the favorite elements that you've included in games?
My favorite elements are fun. And my favorite games are the good ones.
He's on fire today, folks. On fire.
On fire. Like, try the veal. It's really difficult for me to pick a favorite game. Like, it's so mood dependent. So, and it's almost a cliche to say, like, well, my answer could change every 5 minutes, but it literally could, right? So mm-hmm. I just started getting back into Blood Rage. I've been playing Blood Rage for fun again. Because it's been long enough, I'm not sick of it anymore.
Okay. And it is a fun game.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I'm enjoying playing it just for fun, and I don't have to, my designer brain is off now with that game. I don't think about it as a designer anymore, just as a player. And that takes a long time to get there. So most of my newer stuff I don't enjoy playing for fun because I still have designer brain with those ones.
So the next question kind of rolls into that.
Nice segue, by the way.
What are some of your favorite games that aren't your own designs?
That's okay. So if you don't mind, I'm going to reframe your questions, like, because there's so many, right?
Yeah.
I'm an omnivore when it comes to games. I pretty much devour anything. And my favorite experience is finding a new game and playing it for the first couple times, just going through that, like, first 2 or 3 game learning curve. Lately, I've been obsessed with The Mind that came from... a German publisher, and I wish I remembered who, and a fairly new designer.
Yeah.
Did a bunch of really brilliant games. I really like Decrypto from Scorpion Mask, which is it's more gamerly code names. I love those. I love those team ESP type games. classic games I love. I mean, of course, poker is my favorite game of all time.
Okay.
I mean, all poker, right? Not just Hold'em. I like the whole horse spectrum. I love El Grande. It's one of my favorites. I love World of Warcraft, Magic the Gathering, of course, D&D, of course, Lord of the Rings Confrontation, which I did work on, so it's cheating a little bit. But but the original game was designed by Reiner Knizia, and I love the vanilla version just as much as the full version. Yeah, I could go on forever, but those are some of them. Acquire. I'm just going to pepper the rest of this interview with favorite games.
That's great. Awesome. That's great. So,
Stratego,
are there any upcoming projects that you can talk about here on this podcast?
Nope.
Okay.
Well, okay. Yes, I can without, okay. But I can only do it in the teasiest of teasies.
Go for it. Right? That's fine.
So I am currently, let's see, I'm working on a couple of big box games. I'm working on, I'm working on my next big mythic game, which I can't say anything about except it's going to come out some point next year,
okay.
Late next year. I'm working on a big box game co-designed with Rob Davio. He designed some games, who knows. But, some dude,
Rob who?
Some dude. You know what? I figured I'd try out a new designer, give him a
you see. There you go.
Help him get his sea legs, right?
There we go.
Oh, wow. Oh, the worst puns are the unintentional ones. So we're announcing that here at this show, at Expo.
Oh, tomorrow. We look forward to seeing that or hearing about that.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. It's not a legacy game. It's emphatically not.
Okay.
I actually pitched the game to him and be like, hey, Rob, do you want to work on a game that's not a legacy game? He was like, yes, I do. And we did.
Good.
I loved working on that game. We're still kind of working on it a little bit. We're on the tail end of it. I'm co-designing four of the five Kickstarters that we're going to be working on in the next 2 years.
Okay.
And all of them are interesting in their own way. Unfortunately, I can't say anything except they're cool.
That's right. And fun.
We'll see about that.
Okay.
We'll see about that.
So before we say goodbye, tell us what your favorite color is. And it could be favorite color in general or favorite color that you like in board games.
Obviously green.
Okay.
So I'm in every game I play, I'm always green. I'm so used to it, in fact, that if somebody else picks green, I will just unconsciously end up moving their pieces.
Well, thank you for joining us on the show here, Eric, and we'll wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you for having me in your home.
All right.
Can I have my jacket back?
Yes, and your shoes.
Sure.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. It was great having an interview with Eric Lang.
Yeah, very cool.
So one of the things he was teasing us about was this game that's coming on Kickstarter in June. Now, the way that he was talking about with Rob Davio, because he's designing this game with Rob Davio, we're like, what game is this? Like, is it a legacy game? Is he just teasing us that it's not? It's not a legacy game. We were able to go to another press event.
Ooh.
And they revealed that the name of the game is Death May Die.
Death May Die.
And it is a Cthulhu-themed, Lovecraftian-themed game. And okay. I think there's going to be a campaign in the game,
okay.
But it's not legacy.
Okay, so, interesting. That'll be cool to see.
We got to see some miniatures, and it's definitely in the Cthulhu universe. So trying to kill Cthulhu in the face.
Are you allowed to do that? Isn't Cthulhu like... Aren't you supposed to like him in
Lovecraftian? I don't know.
He
said something about shooting him in the face.
No, nice. I don't think so. He's supposed to be an elder god who's, like, going to destroy the world.
Okay.
He consumes...
Do you know anything about Cthulhu?
I do. I just heard somebody saying just recently, though, that, like, fans of Cthulhu won't like it because you kill Cthulhu. I don't know. That's somebody saying it? I'm just passing on.
Oh, yeah. He's supposed to be unkillable. I mean...
Oh, that's true.
He's like the unstoppable force, you know.
You basically just have to keep him from being summoned. That's the only way to actually defeat him.
When you're a cultist, you're not trying to avoid your destruction. You're just trying to either be destroyed first or like be the last person to die or something. Like
Hashtag life goals.
Yeah. All right, well, let's jump into our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption.
All right, on this episode, we have five games that we're talking about that are coming to Kickstarter the week of May 28th, 2018. Kevin, why don't you start us off?
I wanted to talk about a game from Thing 12 Games. It's a two-player game. It is called The Seals of Cthulhu, since we were just talking about...
Right in there.
I know. It's a nice segue. Thanks, guys. So you're either playing as the investigator, or you're playing as a cultist, and you're basically trying to... It's a bidding-type game. You're placing a face-down card in the middle in between yourself and the other player, and you're basically putting influence and saying, I will put up this much influence, and if that person says, okay, I will take the influence, and you get the card, the other player takes the influence. These influence markers are going to be going back and forth throughout the game, but you're trying to really get the cards because the cards are what's giving you more extra stuff to do in the game. But the cool thing is, in the game, these cards are only half. Like the illustrations are only half, like there could be like half of a book. You're trying to find the other half of the book, which the other player has in his hand. And so you don't know when they're going to put it up for auction, you know, trying to influence. So you're trying to figure out, okay, when are they going to do it? I want this. Huh. They know that person.
So are the cards face down in the auction?
Face down. I said that. And yep. So I said it face down. And then whoever wins it then gets to place it face up. So
you don't even know what you're bidding.
The person knows that's putting it face down. The one person knows, the other person doesn't know.
Huh.
Now, there are some cards that eventually, as you gain these powers, there's some cards that will let you peek at the card that's there, okay, or make your other player turn cards face down, which, because the cards themselves give power, and that's what you want at the end of the game. You want the one, I think it's control points, I think it was called. That's what it's called.
Is it so, just two players?
It's a two-player game. Yeah. Okay. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes, and it's got a Cthulhu theme, and you can play either as the cultist or the investigator.
So are there seals in the game?
There are some seals. There's some potions, some books. Yep. So you're I think
what is the seal?
The cultist is trying to open the seal, and the investigator is trying to seal the guy in.
So they're like...
Seal the deal.
Yeah.
Like a lock seal, not like a sea lion.
Not like a seal, not like an animal.
Okay.
No. So
just making sure.
Yes. Melissa.
Do you know anything about Cthulhu?
What you got, Melissa?
So I'm looking at Fantastic Factories, and it is a 1 to 5 player game that involves card drafting and dice manipulation and dice basically sort of worker placement. It is designed by Joseph Chen and Justin Faulkner, and it plays in about 45 minutes to 60 minutes. And basically, there you have a compound where you're building cards into it, and you can use your dice to activate those cards. You can use your dice to get more resources, energy, metal. You can hire employees that help you do certain actions, and it's a lot of trying to get the right cards. The nice thing is, during the dice worker placement phase, it's simultaneous. So everyone rolls their dice and then does their actions at the same time. So you're doing your actions yourself,
did
not
Ryan or Katie
with
play
other
with
people.
Us?
I don't think
maybe
so.
Maybe it was Larry.
Are you limited on, like, all right, multiple people can go to the same space, probably?
Well, it's all your own. So in the worker placement type phase, you have your own compound in your own area where you're placing your dice.
Yep, gotcha.
So there's two phases. There's
the drafting phase,
and that's turn order where you're drafting cards, and then the worker phase where you're using your dice and doing your actions is simultaneous, and you're doing it in your own compound.
Cool.
I enjoyed it. It was a lot of, you know, trying to figure out the best combination of cards and how to use your dice the best way.
Because you're sort of building an engine. It's not like a huge engine, but the cards sort of like work together is a nice way of putting it. It's like, if I can get 2 metal, that metal will help me do this to help me get energy or whatever. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and Kevin and I have a video that we will have.
Yeah, a video review of it.
Preview.
Preview.
So Katie, what do you have?
I'm going to talk about Christmas Lights. It's a 25th century game.
This sounds familiar.
Yes, we talked about it a few episodes ago because we got to see it at Proto Atlanta.
Yeah.
Ryan and I got to play it, and it was actually one of Ryan's favorite things that we actually got to play there. But it was a lot of fun. It's a neat game. First of all, it's very like nostalgic for like the like 50s style art.
Good old Christmases.
I know. It's very nostalgic. It looks like an old pack of Christmas bulbs, the box cover does. But it's a Was it a pattern game? No, I don't know. You're collecting cards. All right, I'm going to start this
You have a goal card that you're trying to accomplish, and you are trying to play your cards in the order of your goal card. So if your card's like yellow, red, green, purple, pink, you're trying to play your cards in that order. But the twist is only your opponents can see your cards. Your cards are facing them.
Okay, you didn't mention that. Kind of like Hanabi or something.
So at the beginning, I think there's three things you do. The first thing is you can trade a card where you take one of theirs and give them one of yours. So you get to see what you're taking, mm-hmm. and they get to see what you're giving them. Mm-hmm. And then I think you might be able to play a card immediately. I'm getting a little bit confused. Then you can offer up a card from your hand. You can flip over some cards. I'm not exactly sure. It's okay. So you can offer one from your hand and flip one over and offer them for, like,
information about your own hand. Yeah. You're like, does anybody want either of these cards? And if you do, you have to answer my question about what's in my hand.
It's a lot more simple than I'm stumbling through. And it was a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, cool. It was neat. And you have to string together different strands of Christmas lights, and so you need plugs. And you might get broken bulbs, and there's different cards in there that you have to kind of work around.
So you have to complete one pattern card, then you have to play one of those junction cards where you're hooking up one set of lights to another set, so a plug card, and then you have to play another pattern card, and then the game's done.
Yeah. That's so it's very kid-friendly. There's like I would say there's maybe just a few cards that actually have any text on them. So you wouldn't even necessarily have to read to be able to play this. So I think it's something that children could really pick up fast. I could see it being one of those games that gets pulled out every Christmas and the family sits around and plays it. It also has there's other games that are played with these same cards and with a couple of other cards that are added in. And there's multiple games that are all played with this same set. So it's not just a single game. Although this was the base game that we played, there's these other games that you can also play, which we didn't get to experience, but it's kind of neat that there were like 10 different other games?
Oh, I don't know if it was that many, but there were a few.
Okay. There were quite a few other games in the same box, so cool. It was really neat. Will, did you have something?
Sure, I was going to give just a quick shout-out to the game Picky Eater. It's a 2-to-5-player card game from Happy Harpy Games.
Happy Harpy.
Coming to Kickstarter May 29th. It's basically just a card game, but it looks like the type of thing that'd be a lot of fun for a family. It's got some cute artwork to it, and you're like laying cards to add things to your food tray or to somebody else's food tray, and then you're scoring points based off of that. So you might be putting like ketchup on your neighbor's ice cream or something goofy and gross like that.
I'd be picky about that too.
I don't even have to be picky at all about that. But it looks like a fun one. It's like a 15 to 30 minute game for ages 8 and up, and it's coming to Kickstarter May 29th. So check that one out if it looks like something interesting to you. And then I think Sarah was going to talk about something we played tonight, maybe?
Yeah, we played an escape room from Argix Games, and they're located in France. And they sent us a little preview, demo version of a larger escape room in a box type of game that they have put together.
And then you skipped out on us.
Yeah, I know.
She got us started.
I had to take the kids to Zach.
She handed us the Red Death envelope, and then
I know we opened it up.
This one was less about escaping and more about figuring out the identity.
We're trying to save someone, right? A victim. Yes. Yeah.
So it was interesting. I mean, we can tell them the premise, right? That's not going to spoil.
Yeah, it's not spoiling. No.
So the premise was that we were sent. There's been apparently some serial killings that have been going on, and we were sent a letter, and in this letter, basically the serial killer sounds like he's a little bit crazy. He sends us a letter that basically has clues about who his next victim is going to be. And so we are trying to race against the clock to try to figure out who this next victim is before he kills that victim.
Yeah, and it was pretty cool. The interesting thing about the game is that it used a lot of, like, internet-based stuff. So there were clues we had to figure out, like, oh, let's go to this YouTube video to figure out the next thing. And then the description in the YouTube video has clues to the next thing that we got to figure out. So there's interesting stuff.
That's nice, especially for a demo. All they had to really send us was an envelope.
Right.
So, yeah, and there was some cool little contraptions in there in the envelope.
Like a box of matches and some other cool things. Spoiler. As soon as you open the envelope, the matches come out.
A lot of Latin.
A lot of Latin.
Well, it was based on like an apocalyptic theme, so.
Yeah, was it called Apocalypse?
It was called Apocalypse, yep.
So we played like the 30-minute demo version. I guess the real game is like 3 hours or something like that. I don't know if you bust that into sessions or just dedicate a Saturday.
So check this one out. It's coming to Kickstarter on June 1st from Argix Games. Yeah.
Cool, so I think we have a contest that's still underway.
Oh, I want to talk about one more quick game.
Okay,
shout out. Ahead. I was showing Sarah last week to, I shouldn't say a shout out, but this game, Yokai Septet. Isn't that cool? What kind of art do you think that is? Japanese?
Let me see.
Okay, it's watercolor.
Yeah, that's about as far as I got.
It's pen and ink
watercolor.
Yeah, I'd say that it looks kind of watercolorish, and it's definitely a Japanese.
Okay, I was hoping it was
like
Japanese.
Like a mix of anime and like their old style. It's kind of neat looking, actually.
So it's a trick-taking game for 3 or 4 players from Ninja Star Games. So I wanted to shout out to them May 22nd.
Cool, check that one out. Okay, so then back to contest follow-up. Action.
We've
had a couple entries already, and we're only in like day one of recording time or whatever.
Because Kevin forgot to give a closing date,
we'll extend that one more week.
Yeah, just for you.
So, what is the closing date?
June 3rd.
June 3rd,
2018.
And what game are we giving away?
And how do they enter? And what is that?
Yeah, I was going to give the closing date before I forgot.
Okay. Got it in.
So, June 3rd, 2018, you have a chance to win a copy of a game that's over here somewhere. Da-da-da. No? There it is. Chaos of Cthulhu. I still have it right here in my hands. By Impulse Games, thanks for sponsoring our podcast, and they have a game currently on Kickstarter called Mad Love. Ryan remembers that. But they're entering a chance to win. And the way you enter is go to hello@tantrumhouse.com.
Email us at hello@tantrumhouse.com.
Yes. Email us at hello@tantrumhouse.com and tell us what your favorite part of the Tantrum House podcast is. And you have 4 choices. And if you want to throw a different choice in there, that's fine. But we're giving you 4 choices. One is the very beginning of the episode where we're just talking and just enjoy each other.
The table talk.
Yeah,
we
table talk.
Need a name for this.
Table talk.
I think somebody else already has that.
So. That's okay, but it's basically that.
We thought you were so clever for half a second.
Oh, thank you. And number 2.
That half second. Second.
Number 2 is the interviews that we do. Do you like the interviews? Or do you like the Kickstarter conniption portion where we talk about the games coming to Kickstarter that week? Or do you like Will's wacky ideas for the games that he gives us?
Couples collision and all
stuff.
That random stuff.
Yeah. So, 1, 2, 3, or 4, email us at hello@tantrumhouse.com with your favorite part of Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast, and you'll be entered for a chance to win Chaos of Cthulhu, and this ends June 3rd, 2018.
So you got 1 more week.
Yep.
Shoot us some emails, and we'll randomly select a winner and give them a cool game, and thank you guys for listening, because that's always fun. Is that all? I think that's we covered the bases, right?
Yeah.
Happy Memorial Day one more time. And we will see you guys next time around.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard. Thank you.
So I got this awesome text message from Ben like an hour after we finished the podcast, and he's like, "You guys are jerks."
Oh my goodness.
I haven't seen Infinity War yet.
Oh no! Oh.
We made sure our whole crew had seen it here, and then we handed it off to the editor, and he hates our guts.
We could have edited it.
No, Ben, I'm so sorry.
You should have told us. We could have done something. Wow.
Yeah. He was like, "I think I was able to edit this just the beginning and just the end." He was like, "I hope there was no cuss words in the middle that I should have moved out."
Pretty good.
I was sitting there and I was like, "I know Ben's feeling like he really does think we're jerks, but he's a good sport." So I was like, "What do you text back? What's the face for? I feel guilty, but this is funny." reality, and I'm sorry.
The blush face, and then the halo.
I did the
and then
face,
the cry laugh.
And the, yeah.
All right, we're sorry, Ben. You should have told us.
Oh, Nick, sorry.
We should have told you, I guess. Yeah.
We're just the worst.
We are the worst.
We are the worst.
Oh, that is so bad. Yeah!